And again, after another brief hiatus, it seems like we're putting out movies every 2 weeks instead of every week. We're back once again with the Cult It or Can It podcast. My guest host tonight will be...
Nick.
Nick, thanks for coming back to the podcast on such short notice.
Hey, anytime, Zach, anytime.
And we're going to be talking about 1988's The Chocolate War, the film version of the beloved young adult, or whatever you want to classify it as, a novel. The novel was written by one of my favorite young adult authors, whose name is Robert Cormier, who passed away about 10 years ago. He was a very prolific writer of young men's literature, and never one to shy away from convention. He was a very controversial author in his time. The film version is directed by Keith Gordon, who was also a child actor before he became involved in the production end of films. And this film stars John Glover, who Nick will remember as one of my favorite character actors.
Hey, and he's a good... I like him, too.
He's great. As well as Island Mitchell-Smith, who audiences might remember as one of the guys from Weird Science, the one who's not Anthony Michael Hall.
isn't that guy... Oh, no, I'm thinking someone else. Never mind.
The one who's not Anthony Michael Hall, Island Mitchell-Smith. And Doug Hutchison, who people might remember as the cowardly guard from The Green Mile, and as well as from his role in the third and fifth seasons of TV's Lost as well. I'm going to talk a little bit about The Chocolate War, about our personal histories with this film, and I just wanted to let Nick go ahead and go first, because I think this is a movie he had on his Netflix queue for like 8 months.
Well, it depends on what you mean by 8 months there. Yeah, you actually recommended this film, because a couple months ago, like, I've been wanting to watch a bunch of movies, but I didn't know what I wanted to watch, so I was taking recommendations, and you actually recommended it, and I finally got around to watching it just the other week, since school's been let out, so,
right.
Yeah, that's my story. It's really not that great. I warned you beforehand.
And my personal history with this film is a little more complicated. I graduated from Eastern Illinois University along with Nick in we were class of 2005, and we got our teaching certifications, and we were both English teachers. And I covered a maternity leave for my first job over the course of a semester in a rather small school in the western part of Illinois. And the teacher there that had come before me, she had seemed like she was kind of a... It wasn't actually her... She wasn't having a baby. It was her son that was having a baby. And since her son and his wife both worked full-time, she retired, and she went home to take care of the baby for a while they worked and while they adjusted to having a child in their lives and all that stuff. And she was a bit older anyway. And I got the feeling that she was kind of a flower power kind of past hippie, because... Every single book that she had left for me to teach for the second semester was a fairly controversial book, and The Chocolate War was at the top of that list. It was the first book that I taught to my freshman class, which is the English 1 class, and I had never read this before, so I was kind of reading through it, and it's a very long book. It's between 200 and 300 pages. I read through this, and I thought, wow, there are some controversial moments in this book. How am I going to be able to teach this? But then I said to myself, well, if she got away with it, then I can get away with it too. And then I happened to notice that it was on the list of banned books as well, and I thought, oh man, some parent's going to call me out on this. But nobody ever did, and it went along fine, and the kids really enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed it, and I really got attached to it. And then I noticed that we also had the movie version of it as well. So I watched that, and I fell in love with the film version as well. So had I not gone and covered this maternity leave, it's possible that I might never have heard about Robert Cormier's The Chocolate War, and I might have not discovered the rest of Robert Cormier's works, which I think are just as good on their own merits as the novel. But we're here to talk about the movie a little bit. So what do you want to start with Nick? Do you want to talk about some of your first impressions?
Well, I gotta say, the performances in the movie were actually pretty good. John Glover, I know him best as being Lionel Luther in TV's Smallville. He's everything I've seen him in. Granted, it seems like he plays like the same character again and again and again, but it works for the roles that he's in.
Yeah, he's pretty good in this movie as well. He plays the head of the they're at a Catholic school. He plays the head of the school. His name is Brother Leon. And he is kind of a self-righteous, indignant bastard in a lot of ways. He's he's very selfish, and he you can tell he's got these machinations looming inside of him, and
he definitely has a lot of ambition that he wants to prove himself. He's definitely ambitious. He definitely wants to prove himself to the school board, because isn't he next in line to be headmaster or something?
Yes, he is. What he does is basically the plot goes as follows. It is we're at a small Catholic private school. I believe it takes place in New England, somewhere in the Boston, upstate New York, Connecticut area up there. Because I get the feeling that even though in the book it says that no one here comes from a very rich family, I get the feeling that a lot of these boys are kind of well-to-do in a lot of ways.
But just you see, what's his face, Archie, when anytime there are shots of him in his house. It's nice and very, seem very upper class, which reflects his personality.
Although there are some students that are obviously there on scholarships.
Yeah.
Emil Janza, for example. Anyway, it's a small Catholic school in somewhere in New England for posterity's sake, and a young freshman, Jerry Renault, who's played by Ilan Mitchell Smith. He comes to this school, he's a freshman, he's coming in, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he wants to try out for the football team. And even though he's constantly getting, harangued and tackled, and he's not doing very well, and he's trying out for to be the quarterback of the team, and he can't even get a pass off, every time he gets knocked down, he gets back up again. And that kind of plays into the school's upcoming big fundraiser, which is where they're going to sell these chocolates. Now, in previous years, the students had to sell 25 boxes of chocolates for a dollar each, something like that. So a fairly easy task. I mean, they used to have us do that all the time when we were in elementary school or when we played youth baseball and things like that. But this year, Brother Leon has made some kind of underhanded, rather devious deal with somebody to buy all these leftover Mother's Day chocolates that were fairly expensive, and he wants people to sell them, sell 50 boxes for $2 a piece. So he's kind of getting in over his head with all this. So he has to motivate the school to sell all these chocolates. And unfortunately, he's having a tough time motivating the school because Jerry Renault, who is under the influence, of a secret society within the school known as the Vigils, decides that he's not going to sell the chocolates, which basically shocks the school because somebody is not conforming to the strict standards of the Catholic school. So on the surface, it sounds like a rather silly story. Oh, this kid won't participate in this fundraiser, but within the context of the culture of the school, Jerry Renault's refusal to sell the chocolates and refusal to be a part of conventional society makes a lot of trouble for Brother Leon as well as the other students in the class. So much so that everybody basically begins to turn their backs on Jerry, and he feels isolated and alone. And he has basically one friend throughout the film, and it's not even, you can't even really classify him as being a good friend. He's just kind of there because they both enjoy running and playing football together. So again, not a very it's not a very complicated plot. This is definitely more of a character study than a plot driven movie.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. One of the things I liked about the storyline, the aspect of the secret society within a high school. Let's move aside the ridiculousness and just it's one of those things you just have to go with.
Right.
But I do like how. Like in other movies, if there'd be a secret society in a school or prep school or something like that, they're always up to some elaborate scheme to we're going to take down the governor or something, just something ridiculous. The thing I can immediately think of is the movie The Skulls, where
I understand what you mean. Okay,
where they have some ridiculous plot that I don't care how powerful a secret society is, that would never happen. But
in this film, the purpose of the secret society is to just basically create chaos around the school. So
yeah, I mean, it's they're going after these first, they're screwing around with the chocolates. It might seem like it's a lame thing, but it's realistic for a high school secret society to pull.
Right, it's a source of
amusement. If high school secret society is real.
Right, it's a source of amusement for them, and there are two very prominent members of the Vigils throughout the film One of them is played by Adam Baldwin, who audiences might know from TV's Chuck, as well as TV's Firefly.
I haven't heard of that show. Is it something good? It doesn't sound good.
No.
Seems like crap.
Avoid it. Controversial.
Yeah.
Adam Baldwin in this movie is he represents kind of the tough act first, think later side of the Vigils, and he's the head of it. He's a senior, and then we have Archie Costello, who's played by Wallace Langham, who's on CSI, Las Vegas. He is more of the thinker side. He's a plotter. He's the one pulling the strings. He knows how to pull. He even knows how to pull Adam Baldwin's strings throughout the film. He does that, and he's the one that comes up with these assignments. In fact, that's his job. His job is to assign various freshmen and other kind of lowly students these difficult tasks. So just for example, one assignment they give is to this boy whose name is they call him the Goober. Is his nickname.
Mm-hmm.
His last name is like Goober or something like that. And they give him this assignment where they want him to go into the classroom and unscrew every single screw in every single desk, and as well as in the teacher's desk, almost to the point where it's going to fall out. So basically any single little, you know, nudge or touch is going to make all the desks fall over. And he does that, and he does that to one of the school's kind of oldest and kind of most pathetic brother, who's the teacher. He's, you know, this very elderly guy, and he's kind of devastated and crushed. And all throughout the film, Goober feels horrible for what he's done to this poor guy's classroom. And that's just one effect that the Vigils have had on the students. And it seems to me like the Vigils they pick on the weaker students, the less popular students. I believe at the beginning of the film, when Archie and then his second in command, Obi, who's played by Doug Hutchison, who we mentioned earlier, they're going over a list of boys that they want to, you know, give an assignment to, and Archie says, "Who's that boy there?" And Obi says, "Oh, that's Jerry Renault. He's a freshman. His mom just died." And you can kind of see the gleam in Archie's eyes of, "Hey, I'm going to mess with this kid. He's in this emotional state." So you can kind of tell that Archie's a real bastard about things, and that's kind of the point of the Vigils, is to create this chaos and, you know, basically make a hierarchy in school where everybody's going to be afraid of the Vigils, everybody who's not a member, that is.
Clearly, the Vigils have been at this for quite some time. I've been witness to a lot of inefficient faculties in the past, but this is just ridiculous.
And you worked at a Catholic school, too, so.
Yeah, but our secret society was more about, no, I'm just joking.
Well, I do get the hint that the Vigils are some of the wealthier students.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing. Considering this is a Catholic high school, they don't get like government funding, so all the funding the school gets is tuition and any other donations and stuff. So, I could see maybe it is the faculty, they kind of like look the other way. I'm sure they know everyone who's actually in the Vigils.
I want to talk about a scene that demonstrates Brother Leon's particular nastiness.
I think I have an idea of where you're going with this, but go on.
Towards the beginning of the film, he accuses a boy of cheating because he got a perfect grade, or he got a very high grade, one of the highest grades in the class. And he brings the boy up front to make an example of him in front of the other class.
Bailey, I poked your eye out. Sorry.
Yeah, he keeps like intentionally hitting this kid with his poker, and he's just, you know, berating this kid in front of the whole class, and you feel horrible for this kid. I mean, you know, you and I were both teachers, and we would never do anything like that to anybody because, well, for ones, it'd be grounds for getting fired. But you just, you know, you've never seen a teacher treat a human being the way that this guy is treating this poor, scared kid.
Intentionally, anyway.
Yes, and the movie version doesn't so much dissect this scene, but in the book version, that is one of the grounds for Jerry to eventually take the assignment and say, okay, I'm not going to sell these chocolates because of the way the brothers are treating the students. So in a way, it's funny because you've got some bully teachers, and then on the other side of it, you got some bully students, and it's kind of like if you're a normal kid at this school, you just can't win.
You know, with that scene, I liked it how he picks up the kid, and he like basically berates the kid. He says, "You said you got a perfect score. Only God is perfect." And he just like goes on these, like, I don't want to call them tangents, but like he escalates the situation worse and worse and worse and worse. And then at like the last minute, he flips it and berates the class for not sticking up for the kid and like hails the kid as being this hero.
Yeah, which is totally rings false to me. But it's an effective scene. It's the perfect showcase for the viewer to see just how evil this brother Leon truly is. I want to talk a little bit about some of the faults of the films, because I think we've kind of heaped a lot of praise on it.
Zach, I got to stop you right here and say, like, overall, even though like I've been telling you a lot of like good things I enjoyed, I did not care for this film overall. I don't know if I'd say I was disappointed, but by the end of it, I was like, eh.
This is, I think, the first time that you and I have kind of gone into a podcast without knowing how each other felt on the movie since we did Scrooged.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
It's kind of been a while, so I'm not surprised by that. This is definitely a film that's not going to appeal to everybody. Some of the faults that I have with this movie, the love interest, who's played by Jenny Wright, who is kind of one of the it girls of the late 80s, is totally left undeveloped.
It seemed very tacked on. I don't know what they were trying to do with that. Now, her role was bigger in the book, which, fair enough. But
she's not even in the book.
Really? Like, what was the point of that, other than to add, like, a girl into the...
That was the point. Well, because she's one of the very, very few female characters in the entire movie. So, I guess they just felt they had to get some estrogen in there somehow.
Maybe they're like, maybe the movie was released in the late 80s, and there's a sequence in there where they accuse Jerry of being gay. Maybe the filmmaker's like, we want to make sure that the audience knows that Jerry's not a gay.
You're probably right about that. I mean, the character is very tacked on. She's in, maybe three scenes throughout the film.
And one of those is like a dream sequence.
And then one of them is just like her and Jerry like, kissing each other.
Very awkwardly, I have to say.
Well, they are like 15. I should talk a little bit about some of the other faults that I found with it. Yeah, that dream sequence is very, very poorly done. It's just like characters' heads appearing in front of a green background or a red background, and it's kind of amateurish. It also seems to be kind of tacked on just to kind of show you some of the angst that Jerry's going through. I don't like the ending of the film at all.
I was reading about that it's completely different from the novel.
Call me a misanthrope or whatever, if you will, but I like the way that the novel ends on a downer.
I remember reading after I saw the movie, I read about the novel. It ends on a very cynical note.
It does, yeah. All throughout the book, he's got a poster in his locker of T.S. Eliot's The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock, which is another reason that this book really, you know, just spoke to me, because that's one of my favorite, it's probably my favorite poem of all time. And there's this line in the poem about, do I dare disturb the universe? And that's the lesson Jerry learns. The lesson he learns is that you don't disturb the universe, because if you do, then the universe is going to take a shit on you, basically.
he tries to learn that same lesson in the movie, but it's way more awkward. Like, Jerry gets the respect of the school, but then, like, his friend and the ghost of his mom are, like, shaking their heads in disapproval.
Yeah, which I kind of like that. That kind of worked for me. That's also kind of like at the end of Star Wars, if, like, the ghost of Obi-Wan had appeared and shook his head solemnly at Luke.
Yeah, you know what? That's weird that you said that, because that's the exact thing that I thought. That, like, Luke blows up the Death Star, and then, like, his aunt and uncle or whoever else is just like, shame on you, you shouldn't have done that.
I kind of like that scene, though. I kind of like the scene. He looks up and he sees kind of like the figure of his mother, and she's disappointed in him because he played their game in the end. So even though the novel ends on a different note from the movie, he still plays their game when he didn't have to.
Can I talk about that fight scene just very briefly?
Yeah,
I gotta say, like, the movies has like little to no violence throughout the entire thing. And then they have this boxing match, which the boxing match is fairly, very tame. I mean, they're just taking one pot shot at each other left and right. But then there comes the very last punch that Jerry delivers to Archie. And, like, it's, like, the most violent thing I've ever seen in, like, a teen movie where he just, like, decks him in the chin and, like, teeth and blood just come flying out. I was, like, watching, like, whoa, did not expect that to come.
We should say this movie is rated R.
That is true.
Yes, but you're right. That did kind of come out of nowhere. It's probably one of that and the various F words. There's not a whole lot. There's like two or three F words.
So yeah, it's very. I was surprised when I learned it was rated R because I mean they drop a couple of swears, but for the most part.
If this movie had come out in this era right now, it would be PG-13. There'd be no way that it would be R. Yeah, I guess we've talked about the faults a little bit. Some of the actors in this were just kind of plucked from the local theater troupes.
You know, I gotta say the acting in this movie outside of, like, John Glover and, like, the guy who played Archie.
Oh, yeah, Wallace Langham.
Yeah, outside of those two actors, the acting in this movie is very blah. Like, even Jerry, it's like, I could care less what happened to Jerry because he was just such an unengaging character.
He's very emo.
I mean... If he was even less than that, at least emo people have some sort of personality about them that would make him interesting to watch, especially since he's rebelling. But it just seems like I'm rebelling. Whoa.
Well, here's the thing: it's really hard for us to put ourselves in his situation.
That is true. We were both mad about campus, so you know.
Well, not only that, but he's 15. He's 15 years old. Obviously, you and I are almost twice that age at this point. And he's going through this whole. He's in a new, very very new environment. He's just lost his mom, who was very important to him. And because he's lost, because he's not the only one that's lost his mom. His dad obviously lost her too. And because of that, he's formed this emotional disconnect with his father. He can no longer connect with his father. He has very, very, very few friends. And the one thing he's trying to do at school, which is to be on the football team, he's just getting pummeled just everywhere in his life. He's getting no support from anyone. So when he does finally kind of stand up for himself and say that I'm not going to sell the chocolates, it's like that's his winning moment. That's a winning moment for Jerry. And that's kind of as bright as it's going to get, really, honestly, in a lot of places. So it's really hard to put yourself in that position because this is a very nihilistic film in a lot of ways.
I don't know. I felt like most of the acting in the film was just unengaging.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like we're sitting here, we're reading the lines, and next scene. I mean, it just the problem with the film that I had was that there was no energy in this movie whatsoever.
That's true.
I know it's. I don't want to give the impression here that like there has to be like explosions and like the ton of action, but even in like a drama, there's a certain amount of energy where you just want to be. You want to know you're invested in these characters. You want to know what. Is coming next. Like, I can't think of an example off the top of my head that sounds really bad, but take a film like Dead Poets Society, which I have mixed feelings about to begin with.
And it's a very comparable film to the Chicago War.
With that movie, you have characters that are, you know, kids the same age. They're interesting, they're fun, the acting there works. You're engaged with what's happening. There's an energy about that film. With this one, there's just not. I mean, I know the tone is very different, but it just, I don't know.
This film, if you've ever felt like Jerry's character, where you've been kind of, it's kind of like you against the world, where you're alone, this film has the potential to really speak to you. And there are a lot of times where I feel that way. And when I'm feeling that way, sometimes I'll put this movie on, or I'll go through the book again, because I do own the book. And there were many times when I was a teacher in my 2.5-3 years of teaching, where I would see a student, because we'd go to the library and we'd check out books, and I'd see a student who kind of reminded me of a Jerry type, and who couldn't find a book, and I would almost always recommend them The Chocolate War, and I didn't have anybody come back to me and say to me, "Wow, that book sucked." In fact, I had a lot of students come back to me and say, "Wow, that was a really, you know, great experience. I'm glad that you had me read this book for the book project or whatever." So I feel like that there is merit to this story, but the film doesn't succeed on the same level that the book succeeds, and that's okay. That the film kind of has its own voice. Some of the things you were talking about there, Nick, some of the weaknesses you were talking about, those are better fleshed out in the book, where there are more characters and where where Jerry isn't the primary focus. I mean, you get just as much insight into what Archie's thinking and into what Obi's thinking and into what Brother Leon's thinking that you do with Jerry in this film. Obviously, the film would have a more difficult time if it was constantly switching forth back and forth between different characters' perspectives. So the director has chosen to focus on Jerry, and there's kind of no other way around it. You can't really sustain a film by putting it through the lens of Archie's character throughout the entire film, because he's not a character that audiences are going to identify with and sympathize with. So you kind of have to do it through Jerry's, and I guess that's a weakness of the film as well. But I do like this movie a lot. I do think that there is a lot to like about it. Sometimes we talk about music in the movies that we watch too, and most often those parts get cut out of podcasts because our podcasts usually just go on for so long that we have to cut some things out. But I do want to say that I thought this film, the music in this film is very 80s, obviously.
Yeah.
Because this film was released in the 80s, so it's a product of its time. But I do feel like a lot of the musical cues are very appropriate, even if they're very 80s. There's a lot of stuff from Peter Gabriel's album, which I believe is called So. And that's actually one of my favorite albums in this decade, or any, of all time. And I think that the music that was chosen off that album is very effective.
I gotta say, just because I absolutely love the 80s, that, like, when the film started and, like, the synth soundtrack started up, I was like, awesome. That makes any movie 10 times better than it should be.
Well, there's a real great Peter Gabriel song on the album called We Do What We're Told.
That fits.
That fits, you know, that just fits perfectly. That fits like a glove. But at the end when they play the Kate Bush song Running Up That Hill, I mean, that's just... To me, that's terrible. And they wanted to use David Bowie's Heroes, but they couldn't afford the rights to it. Obviously, this is a very low budget film, so they couldn't.
It was like $500,000 or something like that.
Yeah, which it didn't even gross that much in theaters. I think we've kind of exhausted this. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about, Nick?
No, not really. Nothing that springs to mind.
So I think that I already know what you're going to say, getting some of your feelings. But who knows? It wouldn't be the first time I'd be shocked. If we were going to cult or can this, I'll let you go ahead and go first, Nick. Why don't you go ahead and cult or can this for us?
I got to say, I got to can it. There's a lot of kind of good stuff in there, but overall, the movie just doesn't work. I mean, the coming-of-age story that they present in here, it's been done so many times by so many other movies in much better ways that this film is just kind of redundant and unnecessary. I haven't read the source novel, but from what it sounds like, what you're telling me, the source novel goes into a lot more detail than the film does on a lot of the things that I apparently had been commenting on during our chat here.
Right.
I gotta say, can it?
About this film, I have to say that while yes, the novel is way more effective, I do think that there are some pretty haunting images and some effective use of music and character in this film. This is not a film for everybody. This is not a film that you could gather all your friends and say, oh, you've got to see this. This is amazing, because chances are most of them aren't going to like it. But this is a film that really spoke to me maybe at a time when I needed it, or at times even now when I need it. I got to say cult it. I think it's a good film. I really like John Glover's performance as Brother Leon. I really like Doug Hutchison and Wallace Langham as Archie and Obi. I think that they're great. And there aren't enough nihilistic, don't disturb the universe type films, especially teen films. Because how often do we get a teen film where it's like, hey, we've all got to come together and we've got to succeed and do this. And even though the ending of this film has been changed around a bit from the novel, I still feel like the film does an effective job of portraying that don't disturb the universe message that echoes throughout the novel. So I'm going to go ahead and say cult this film. Nick, it's okay that we're split on this because you and I are two rational adults.
Yeah, well, your opinion's wrong, Zach. So. I'm going to flame you on the internet now.
That's what the internet is for. All right, so I'm going to get ready to go hiking, buddy. So I'm going to say thank you for being a part of this podcast. I appreciate it.
No problem. I'm going to go work on a research paper. Awesome.
Awesome. This has been the Culted or Canon podcast. Please visit our blog at cultedorcanon.blogspot.com. Let us know what you think of the show. Please leave us some comments, leave us some messages, leave us some suggestions for future iterations of the podcast. We're probably going to try and come at you once every 2 weeks, just because that's a little bit easier with me as I get out there and I continue my job search, and as Nick gets out there and continues his graduate education. So for my co-host,
Nick,
I am your host, Zach, saying once again, thanks for tuning into the show.
I'm going to flame you on the internet now.